In the year 1900, the average farm was 147 acres. Today, the average farm is 447 acres. Given how technology has made it possible for one farmer to grow more crops, we simply must ask, will technology replace people on the farm by the year 2050?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 998th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Sasebo who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Hello, sir.
Dave, I have a question for you.
Is there a place called Sasebo?
There really is. It's Japan. Really? Absolutely. Wow. Now, the question for you is, do you think technology will render us useless by the year 2050?
I don't know by that year, but there's definitely moves being made to make that happen.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, folks, here are the fundamental requirements of farming. We need time, money, and know-how. Time is the investment of being there, as in the farmer spends time in the field. Money is a stock of accumulated assets used to pay expenses, as in the farmer spends money on seeds, equipment, and land. Know-how is the investment of skill, as in the farmer knows how to convert energy from the sun and nutrients from the earth into the food for the marketplace. The amount of each input required for a successful farm can best be described as a mathematical problem. Given the amount of time at one's command, money at one's disposal, and know-how at the ready, what is the proportion in which these three inputs should be employed to produce the maximum? Thanks to Thomas Jefferson for that, by the way. For most of the millennia we have spent here on the land of good earth, time and know-how were the farmer's dominant inputs, as there was very little money. Then all but a few farmers moved into town, and time became very expensive. Fortunately, the rapidly escalating value of farmland made borrowing money very cheap, especially when inflation erased varying percentages of the debt every year. With money to spend, farmers could simply buy all the time they needed in the form of time-saving technologies like equipment, chemicals, and genetics. These technologies have made it possible for individual farmers to grow more crops than individual farmers could in the past. However, today's farmer does not grow the crops alone. To the contrary, the farmer must rely on an army of support personnel in the city to provide the time-saving technologies needed to farm. Given how much these technologies have changed agriculture over the past 100 years and how quickly this technology is advancing today, we simply must ask, will technology replace people on the farms by the year 2050? Not too far in the near future, but if you think of how quickly technology is changing things, you just gotta wonder. Well, here to help us wonder into the future, we have Roger Royce, who is an attorney and host of Silicon Valley's AgTech Incubator and AgTech Conference. Welcome to the Food Chain.
Okay, thank you, Michael. It's good to be here in sunny, clear Santa Cruz today.
Okay, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. You know, first of all, how on earth did an attorney become so intimately involved in agriculture technology?
Well, I guess everyone needs a hobby, and since I can't sing or dance, I chose agriculture tech. Seriously, I grew up in an agricultural area.
North Dakota?
That's right, North Dakota, and my family was involved in the produce business, so I got to know that industry pretty well throughout my youth. And since being in California, my practice has been around technology companies in Silicon Valley. And I do work with several farmers and growers, but it's primarily technology. And one day a few years ago, I took a look around and I had this sensation. Imagine climbing Mount McKinley and finding Mount Everest sitting behind it. I looked around and saw this perfect storm in California, a $46 billion a year agricultural industry, a very robust, it's the center of the technology universe in Silicon Valley, and it's also the center of the venture capital universe. It's all in a very short distance, a very
really
contained
short
space.
Distance, if you think about it, just miles, a few miles.
That's absolutely right. Just a few miles. It's all right here. So we had that perfect storm of factors here for a technology revolution in agriculture. And I was very interested in that. And I looked around and I didn't find any really good organized groups promoting that sector. So I started it. I co-founded with John Matason a group called Silicon Valley Ag Tech. And out of that, and the idea was to just generate some interest in the space. And that's how I got involved in it.
So there it is. So proximity.
Proximity was big, but more opportunity.
There it is. Well, you know, and if you think about how much technology has changed things, it's simply staggering. Just in my lifetime, I was telling you before the show how the first horse I was ever bucked off was a big dapple gray workhorse on my grandparents' farm when I was a wee tyke. My Uncle Dan put me up on top of this big, huge dapple gray for a photograph, and that dapple gray launched me across the barnyard into a mud puddle about 100 yards down the way, I think. But at any rate, it was an actual working horse on a working farm. You know, my grandfather's making the transition from horses to tractors. And later as a teenager, I worked out in the fields hoeing weeds. And boy, if you hoe weeds for a few summers and you start looking for something else to do, and of course we found it. But, you know, those were all time-consuming things, working on the farm, you know, working with horses, working, hoeing weeds. In considering today's program and the how technology is changing, I was struck with a question, a philosophical question actually, that simply kind of startled me. And it's the relationship, of course, with time and money, because technology is a way of replacing our time in the fields with labor-saving devices. We take our money and we go buy tractors. Instead of walking through the fields, we drive through them. Instead of hoeing weeds, we, you know, put on some glyphosate and so on. And so the value of money has been such that it's much more usable than the value of time. Our time is simply too expensive. Both your time and my time, we're not going to go out and hoe weeds in the beet fields anymore. So there it is, and so given that dynamic, and we look into the future, we see a continuing growth of technology because we have the money to invest in it. But what if that dynamic were to change? What if I look at here in the United States, we have 93 million people who have dropped out of the labor force. These are people of working age. They're no longer working. And they're supported by a community that's $18 trillion in debt. So I look at that and wonder, what would happen to the dynamic of that time and money equation were those 93 million people to go back into agriculture and invest their time in growing food? How would that change the dynamic, do you think, of time and money?
Well, you know, every revolution, has its dislocations, and what you're talking about really is about the leverage that farmers are now able to apply. Because you're absolutely right. You know, that your initial comment about how the size of the farm has been getting larger. Well, there's a reason for that. It's leverage that technology is enabling. So the same time that a farmer used to require to, you know, for 100 acres is now, you know, can be applied to produce on 500 acres. And
But it's not the farmer alone, though.
It's not the farmer alone. You're right.
The farmer has somebody supporting him with those time-saving technologies.
And that's where we're going. More and more as I get into agriculture, I'm finding people who are, you know, who are technologists more than farmers. Well, yeah, right. Exactly. Right here. And when you talk to the people around agriculture, you're not only finding traditional labor, but you're finding people who know software very well. You're mm-hmm. finding integrators. You're finding biologists. And
but what happens if the dynamic changes?
That dynamic is changing.
All of this time that is currently being unused, essentially, 93 million people, what happens to that dynamic if they go back and use their time to grow food? That's kind of the question we're going to play with a little bit when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host today, and we have Roger Royce, who is an attorney and host of the Silicon Valley's Ag Tech Incubator, Ag Tech Conference, and you. Do stay tuned.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land, we can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Well, we have a very interesting question on the table that nobody on earth wants to ponder. And that question is, what happens if the 93 million people who have fallen out of the workforce and have no longer gainful employment here in the United States decide to employ their time back in the fields? What will happen to the world of agriculture technology then when it has to compete with the labor of hands of all of those people? Because essentially that's what agriculture technologies do, is free us from having to spend our time in the field. But what if our time the relationship changes and we have all of this time and we must do something? And what if that's something we do is grow food? Roger Royce is a technology innovator. He hosts the Ag Tech Incubator in Silicon Valley and Ag Tech Conference. So Roger, it's kind of a crazy question, and probably nobody's ever thought of it, but what do you think would happen if all those people all of a sudden decided they had to do something, and growing food is one of them?
Okay, thanks, Michael. You know, if you can hear this station, you are likely to be on this planet with 9 billion other people. Okay, the population is growing really quickly. And I hear what you're saying, that agriculture is getting less labor intensive. But there are places for those people to go, and they're going to go into the technology. They're just going to have to, because we are going to need technological solutions to get more product from a limited amount and steady amount of resources. That could happen through urban agriculture. That could happen through agriculture becoming more local. It could happen just through really advanced technological solutions. But, you know, I don't see, certainly I agree with you that the agriculture world would become less labor intensive, and those people will have more leisure time, I suppose, and do other
things. Well, that's what's been happening, right?
I'm sure.
You know, technology has freed us from the labor of the land. It's as simple as that. Where 70% of us used to be on the farm, now two of us are on the farm. So that technology has given us that freedom. But the freedom has given us lots of leisure time. And 93 million people are now no longer gainfully employed that should be employed. So, you know, I see that relationship, that the proportion is changing.
Well, you know, when I was in school taking economics, I remember hearing a professor one time say that there comes a point where the means of production becomes more important than the production itself.
Ah.
And, you know, and what you're saying is that, gee, is it may be more important to employ people than it is to produce. I don't think we're there yet, and that's not the immediate problem.
We're certainly not there yet. No.
And it's not the immediate problem we need to solve. The immediate problem to solve is feeding 9 billion people. Mm-hmm. Because this is a rapidly growing population, and what we're trying to do is help with the technologies that is going to make farming more efficient and more productive and allow increased production from the same amount of resources, because that just has to happen or we're going to have problems on this planet that are far beyond people having too much leisure time.
Okay, let's put the my goofy question aside and turn to it. You're hosting an ag incubator and an ag tech conference. What is an incubator in it? What is it? When you say incubator, I think of chicken brooders, you know. You have lots of baby chicks or something. That's kind of what it is, isn't it?
It kind of is. We're taking those baby chickens, those startup companies, these really good ideas, and we're going to help turn them into businesses, fundable businesses with products and markets and revenues and people, and most of all, good, solid technology. So that's what an incubator is.
You kind of put people together, put technologies and people together.
Well, remember what you said at the start about that triangle of time, money, and people? Mm-hmm. Well, our triangle is very similar. It's technology, money, and people. And if we can find good people, we're going to find good ideas and good concepts. We're going to match them with a good team of mentors. We're going to put them in front of the investment community, and we're going to help them with their technology by putting them in front of the scientific community as well. So hopefully we're going to take these good ideas and turn them into good businesses.
Well, that opens up the whole world of agriculture technology. And my goodness, you know, considering how much agriculture has changed just in the last few decades, monumental. So many, I think it's probably the greatest migration of people in America, at least, that our country has ever seen, and that would be the migration from the farm to the city. We've all pretty much packed our bags, left the farm, and moved into the city, and as a consequence, those farms out in the country have become very big. I remember a few years ago doing a radio show from the Phil and Barbara Hamburger ranch or farm. I think it was either North Dakota or South Dakota, probably South Dakota. But they ushered me into their office, and it reminded me of the bridge on an aircraft carrier. I mean, you know, they had windows, mm-hmm. picture windows going around this office, and they could look out into the sea of corn and soybeans, 25,000 acres. And it was just the husband and the wife and their kids running 25,000 acres. You know, the office was filled with computers and satellites and satellite weather and they're tuned into the markets, you know, and everything was right there. And but the mere notion that a husband and wife could run 25,000 acres of crops. Wow. It's impossible without all of those technologies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the direction that farming is going, especially with the software tools that are available and the use of big data, sensors, drones, robotics, because traditionally farming, a farmer could only farm a farm that's as large as his memory could support.
Right.
As long, you know, or he could remember what patch of soil needs more water, what patch might need some sort of chemical. Well, with software tools, theoretically, a farmer can farm a piece of land the size of Texas. You know, that's the leverage that the software tools and the technology tools are providing right now.
Well, let's start with the software. And, you know, for those who don't know, what exactly do you mean by software tools?
What I mean are data gathering tools, and it's more than software. It's really a combination of a lot of different pieces of technology that starts with hardware. It starts with sensors, really, out in the field, telling the farmer in real time what the soil is like, what's going on in his
field.
So
they poke a sensor into the soil, and they can tell.
That's one way.
Mm-hmm,
that's
they can
one
tell
way.
How much moisture is in the soil.
Moisture, exactly. Moisture content, nitrates. They can what does the plant look like right there at ground level? What does it look like from above? We have drones, we have micro satellites that can do this now. So the farmer can be sitting, you know, many miles away from that field and know exactly what's going on in the field in real time. So those are the sensors that bring that data back. Of course, then there has to be the software that analyzes the data and tells him what to do with it. You know, it's one thing to know what the moisture content of a patch of land is. It's another thing to know what to do about it. And then, of course, there's got to be the equipment and the mechanics that are going to solve those problems. Mm-hmm. So it's really a combination of things.
Yeah, but, okay, so the software allows you to manage information, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yep.
You get the information from sensors, various kinds of sensors out there. Farmer used to go out into the field, you know, the typical photograph of a farmer is somebody kneeling down, picking up a handful of soil and letting right. it fall through his fingers, right?
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. Okay, so he can be out there, he can put sensors into the soil, he can fly the field with a drone and take infrared photographs of the crops and see where trouble is. He can get all of this information and is fed into his software management system, and he could sit there and know where trouble is and where things are going well. And then what do you do with it? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, we're talking technology of the agriculture in the future. Hey, do you think technology will replace people on the farm by the year 2050? Been really changing things really fast, and we don't have that much long before 2050. You're invited to participate today with Roger Royce, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What kind of equipment or technology would you like to see brought to bear on the farm? Do stay tuned, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Hello out there. Do you think technology will render us all useless by the year 2050? There'll be machine and software to run everything, and our job will be to hang around and watch Oprah on TV or something. What will we do? Well, maybe it won't be that bad. But technology is the subject of the day, and the question is, will technology replace farmers out there in the field? And given the amount of change in the past few decades in agriculture, you know, going literally from horse and buggy era to satellites, oh my goodness, the changes have been incredible in just a few short years. And we're talking with Roger Royce. Roger is an ag innovator himself because he is a sponsor and the host of the Ag Incubator in Silicon Valley and the Ag Tech Conference. So he's on the focal point of agriculture technology in Silicon Valley and California's great agriculture. And lots of changes. And we're one of the big ones is the change in the ability to manage information. We were talking about how in the old days you had to, your farm was as big as your mind, only what you could keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
And today you can keep track of a farm the size of Texas, given the amount of information gathering and processing abilities that we have. And that led me to the thought that some of the companies like Monsanto and DuPont, those companies who are very big in genetics and chemicals, are starting to sell information services as well as their genetics and technologies. And I think what they're doing is gathering information and processing it for farmers so that they can recommend to farmers that they should do, you know, buy this particular chemical or this particular set of genetics for this crop or whatnot. Do you have any idea what's going on there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, one of the first, that is exactly what's going on in the market. And I remember, and it starts at a much more basic level. One of the first drone companies I ever talked to, was quite an eye-opening experience, told me how his drone technology is going to fly up and down the fields, take high-speed pictures of the plants, and will determine through a software system in the cloud what's wrong with the plant. Does it have any particular disease? And then immediately give that information back to the farmer. And I thought, well, that's great. The farmers really, you know, would pay a lot for that data, I'll bet. And he says, oh, no. We're not going to sell that to the farmer. We're going to sell that to the chemical companies that sell the pesticides to the farmer. And that's when it kind of dawned on me. It's the first time I thought, wait a minute, we've got a real legal issue here. Who owns that information? Who owns that data? And that is one of the challenges, because right now in almost any technology that's out there gathering data on a farmer's field and feeding it back to the farmer, you're going to find at least three different companies that are going to claim some sort of ownership to some aspect of the data. And this, of course, is a lawyer's playground, and that's one of the challenges we have. But on a technology side, yes, you're absolutely right. The technology challenge is gathering the data and putting it in a form that's useful to the farmer and somehow getting it back in the farmer's hand so he can make decisions based on it.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Folks, if you'd like to participate in today's conversation, the phone number is 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080. We're going to go to Teresa. Teresa, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Michael.
Welcome aboard. You got Thanks. Roger Royce, and we're talking technology.
Well, Roger, I'd like to start out by questioning the idea that the purpose of technology is to feed the, now you said 9 billion, but it's actually 7.2 billion people in the world. So I think you're living a little bit in the future here, in a hypothetical future. But if we look at now what's happening, what it all comes down to is land monopoly. The idea that money really owns land, that land isn't distributed among people who work it. It's monopolized by a few people who have the money to be able to buy it and then to invest in all this technology. So right now, the Green Revolution has been a dismal failure. That hasn't resulted in feeding more people, because when you have land monopoly like that, people need to make money from it, and so they end up growing export crops, crops that are going to sell in the developed world, and it ends up feeding fewer people with more land.
Huh.
Well, let me jump in. Let me disagree with you a little bit on this.
Oh, boy.
Especially here in California, one of the things that really attracts me to this industry is that it is an industry of small business. The average farm in California is a $6 million a year operation, which, while that's a pretty good-sized business, it's still a small business. So the kind of consolidation that you're talking about, I don't think we've seen that, at least not here in California. Something that could happen because of these technology tools. You could see massive consolidation like you've seen in every other industry. That's absolutely the case. I mean, there was a time in this country when we had 100 different auto manufacturers, right? And now we got, what, three? So that definitely could happen, but it certainly hasn't yet. And I think some of the technology tools that we're talking about and we're enabling are going to make the small farms more competitive, at least initially.
But by Michael's statistics, that the average size of a farm has gone from 100 and some acres to 400 and some acres, that shows that farms have gotten bigger and that there are far fewer farm owners or farm workers, because it's gone down to 2%. So now the technology that gets used are things like the pacemaker, because strawberries, for instance, you need a human to pick them because they're too delicate. So You end up having these machines that go along the rows and that force the workers to stay in a stooped posture and pick faster and faster along these rows. It's not technology that helps or replaces workers. It's technology that makes their work more arduous.
What's interesting, you should mention that. Actually, some of the technologies we're developing in our incubator do just exactly the opposite. For example, that example you just gave, there's a lot of repetitive stress injury among farm workers out in the fields. And we actually have one company that's developing automated technologies that reduce the amount of hand motion and muscle motion that's required to pick some of these crops. And it's actually a great benefit to the workers.
So I watched a a YouTube video on farmer bots, you know, robots they make for farms. And there was one that really struck me. It was a short video of a horticulture operation, lots of plant starts in containers. And they have these little robot machines going around picking up these containers of plants and moving them from one place to the other, like people would always do, but they're robots now. And I don't know, that seems like it's kind of replacing an arduous task with a machine. But that said, like Teresa says, I'm not sure they're able to replace strawberry pickers with machines yet. I know they've been trying for a long time.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, that's in the future. But I think these are all good developments. I mean, I think first of all, there certainly is a labor shortage. Nobody would doubt that in terms of.
But what happens if those 93 million people who are no longer employed come back to agriculture? Oh, it's just a thought. Michael Olson, Teresa, thanks for call. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll pursue this with your phone calls, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Teresa, hold on. We'll pick you up when we come back. Thank you all for tuning in. Do stay tuned. Teresa, are you still there?
I am.
Good. Roger Royce and I both come from way up in the Dakotas in Montana, and we're wondering about your comment about growing things for export, and you seem to be kind of down on that, and we're kind of thinking, well, it's kind of nice to have something to sell to the world, given the amount of things that we're buying from the world.
Well, let me tie this into a final point that I wanted to make, which is that this whole premise rests on the idea that fossil fuels and chemistry are going to stay as potent as they are now, and that we're going to be able to continue to farm using those. Just this quarter, Monsanto's earnings fell by 34% because South American farmers have rejected GMO crops because they're not living up to their promise, and they're causing enormous health impacts in the U.S., which, you know, we've been recognizing. So, and you look at how the land is being plowed by these machines, and it's destroying the soil structure. The fossil fuels are depleting the soil so that there needs to be more and more fertilizers. So I think that that whole rest on really a pretty precarious future that says that things are going to remain the way that they are, and we're going to be able to continue to use technology to replace human labor.
Uh-huh. And go ahead, Roger.
So let me jump in. Thank you, Teresa. You've kind of hit on a really major theme of what we're doing here, and that's sustainability. And, you know, let me give you an example. You know, there was a time before there were cars in this country that everybody was riding horses. And that created huge problems in urban areas. There was manure stacked up on the roads. You couldn't hardly walk. It was unsanitary. It was really just very unpleasant. And if we had continued to rely on horseback travel, the cities would have become unlivable. And then a car came along, an automobile, and everybody said, and that manure disappeared. And everybody said, this is great. This is so environmentally great. You know, it solved one problem, but you know what? We created another one. Now it was air pollution. So then other technologies had to come along to solve that. Well, we're kind of in the same sort of position with agriculture, because some of the technologies have solved one problem and maybe created another one. But we've got new technologies and new things in the works right now that, for example, are going to replace reliance on chemicals, going to replace reliance on anything that is really harmful in the GMO space. Let me give you some examples. You talked about chemicals, and I think where you're going is maybe nitrates into the soil and maybe some of the disadvantage of traditional farming that is somewhat indiscriminate. Well, now we've got what we call precision farming, okay? So we only need to apply exactly what needs to be applied where. This applies to water. This applies to chemicals. This applies to nitrates. So we're going to reduce the impact on the environment with the technologies that are currently out there. And some of these technologies are going to replace that altogether. You think about the robots that can go up and down the field, identify a diseased plant, and pick it, rather than having to spray it. Well, you can see that there's, you know, enormous environmental benefits to that. So And, you know, the other theme that you sort of touched on here is the idea that, that agriculture is really going to be local. And, you know, once, and we hadn't talked about urban farming yet, and maybe we won't, but, you know, there's a, I can tell you this from having been in the produce industry, there's a tremendous amount of spoilage and waste just in the shipping and the packaging process, including damage. There are technologies out there that are dealing with that problem as well. So we're reducing waste, we're reducing spoilage, we're reducing damage. So I think technology is a good thing. You know, I think technological innovation in agriculture is a good thing. And the main point here is not only is it a good thing, it's a necessary thing. You know, there's not enough resources right now to feed the people that are going to be on this planet. And once people start getting hungry on a massive scale, you're going to see the kind of social disruption that we don't have right now, but I don't think we want to have.
Teresa, a quick follow-up.
I think there's enough resources to feed the people who are producing themselves, and that one consumer who's not producing is an overpopulation of one, because it monopolizes food rather than food going to the people who produce it.
Ooh, what do you think will happen if those 93 million people in the United States who are not working suddenly find themselves back in the business of farming?
Well, they don't have any money to, in order to buy the food. And so you're looking at how do you distribute that food when it's all based on a monopoly of a few people who have money looking to be able to make more money from it.
Okay, Teresa, thank you very much for that call. Really appreciate it. We're going to go to Rory. Rory, thank you for the call.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, California agriculture grows over 200 different crops and commodities, you know, specialty crops like these and all these different oddball things. So there's not going to be a monopoly like you see in the Midwest where they're growing corn, soybean, and wheat in upper Midwest. That's not going to happen. Like your guest said, technology is necessary. It's been happening since the dawn of time, and it is accelerating in certain areas. And I'll give one example. The previous caller talked about these picking machines that you see out in strawberry fields. Well, they're actually sparing the employees out there from running back and forth to the end of the row. So it's actually saving energy for the individual. And they moderate the crews. They put crews that are at a certain picking speed together so they can keep pace. And they allow them to stand up and stretch their back. So they're not dying. It's actually helping them. And there's some models you'll see out in certain fields of these picking machines, some that will accommodate up to 20 pickers. And there's some smaller ones. They're actually gathering the fruit and putting it on a pallet in the middle of the machine, and they're powered by solar-powered motors. And the solar arrays are on the roof, and these people walk, and there might be as many as 8 pickers. It might cover 4 rows.
Rory, can you hold for a minute? We got to take a quick break.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Good. Hold on. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson right back. Do stay tuned. Few minutes. So much to talk about. Well, we have so much to talk about. Ag innovation, ag technology. Oh, my goodness. Think of the changes agriculture technology has made in just a few short decades. Rory, you're a true ag professional. You've been watching very closely. How would you describe the difference technology has made, you know, in the time that you have been in the industry?
You know, I would say in the strawberry production, innovation in technology, and then primarily breeding, classical plant breeding efforts have raised the production per acre. So it's allowed growers to remain profitable and to stay in business, and it's given lots of people work. And the pickers are making piece rate plus an hourly bonus. So they're making, in the peak of the season, plus you're a slowpoke, everybody's making probably $15 or better an hour during the high production time. And so people are working. And the interesting thing is running a strawberry root, dormant root deal right now, and we look for people that understand piece rate, that know how to move fast. Now, if you can invent a machine, and there are those that are working on it, to do that, then these people would be out of work. But it's very difficult, because a good
trimmer will trim anywhere from 15 to 20,000 plants per day, and they're making a piece rate anywhere from 10 to 11 bucks a thousand. So you people that can think like piece rate people, and these 93 million people that are out of work, my recommendation to them is go grow a garden in your backyard, a community garden, get with it, pull some weeds like you did, Michael, and I do all the property. Get on it, start learning. That's where you learn. I wouldn't tell those 93 million to try to come out to a piece rate operation like this, because the guys that grew up hand to mouth south of the border are going to work them under the table.
I know. You know, I had a job once picking strawberries when I was going to college up in Oregon, and I'd pick a row, and the professionals would pick five rows. It was ridiculous.
That's it.
Well, you
that's
know, Michael, it. I was a guy out selling those strawberries on the road that you picked. You know, Rory, interesting yeah, that it's the strawberry people. I've talked to lots of grower organizations in the state, and I will say that the strawberry industry is very much embraced technology. You know, they understand the value of this. They understand the importance of moving ahead, and they've been right at the forefront in terms of groups that are willing to look at new and innovative ideas. So that
absolutely.
And what you're telling me, it kind of proves that out. The proof's in the pudding. You're getting results out
well,
of this.
Well, who isn't? Yeah. Which sector of agriculture is not interested in technology?
It's survival. When you're using, you know, the business scale now, maybe small organic guys, mom and pop operations that are working the farmers markets, they don't have to do as much of this. But if you're going to be a standalone, large scale business, you need to use the technology that's available, and you need to be aware of and working with the innovators to stay ahead of it. And the reality is too, to Teresa.
And you have to stay. You have to stay tuned in. Rory, thanks for the call.
Right,
we're losing your cell there. And, you know, the way to stay tuned in it is to participate in the Ag Incubator and
Absolutely.
The Ag Tech Conference put on by our guest today. Roger, how do we do that? How do we tune into that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us on our site, RoyceLawIncubator.com, or our conference site, which is svagtech.org, or just Google Royce Law Silicon Valley AgTech Conference.
And hey, do you think technology is going to replace people in agriculture?
I think that it may repurpose a lot of people in agriculture.
Okay, folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Roger Royce and you. Thank you for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.